Save big on all your back-to-school needs, all in the Kroger app. Get three-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean ground beef for $3.99 a pound with your card. Then get Oreo cookies, Chips Ahoy, or Kool-Aid jammers for $1.99 each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Orr. Albert Breer is back and possibly aware or unaware of all the places I said he was while he was on vacation. I said you were in jail one week. Said that you had been injured in an NFL insider knife fight. Maybe you
like
caught a little...
Like the Anchorman fight?
Yeah, you got like a little... Caught like a little shiv from Ian Rapoport from NFL Network or something like that.
He'd have to reach up a little, you know.
As a fellow short man, I can't laugh at that. But yeah. I think Ian and I are about the same height. But welcome back, Albert. We're going to go through 10 burning questions heading into training camp. It is absolutely startling that summer is over. We basically had our like community summer fest. I did a full Fu Manchu, wore a Fu Manchu all weekend. Felt good. Basically lived in a tent for a couple days. Ate pretty much nothing but hot dogs, and I'm ready now. Now that that's over,
I like it.
The football season is here.
This is like I think the best way to describe it. Like this was obviously it's a little different, but. It's that feeling in the pit of your stomach when you were playing football growing up, when practice was going to start. And I love playing football, and I played for 9 years, and you know I know you played too, and like I neither of us at a very high level, to be clear. But
speak for yourself.
but I remember distinctly that feeling in the pit of your stomach that it, like two-a-days were coming.
Yes.
And once that started, summer was over, even though like that's why like I think like Brady's speech, like everyone could connect with that, like knowing your like he said something about like knowing your friends are at the beach or at the pool or whatever, and you're out there in like these I don't want to go Junction Boys on everybody, but I think people of our age can relate with the feeling of the dust coming up off the field in the morning as you're doing up downs, like that like dirt like that comes off. You have this film over your face all day. And so it's not exactly the same as like knowing that, but it's sort of similar and knowing like, all right, like once this starts, my weekends are gone. And like, we love what we do. Similar to like playing football. Like we love the like what we do, but it's just the feeling before you're in it. And once you're in it, you're fine. But the feeling before you're in it is a little jarring.
I always remember, like, I got it in the same place in my friend Jason's front porch. He had, like, two rocking chairs, and we would play N64, like, until our eyes bled. And then his parents were like, just go outside for, like, 5 minutes. And then I remember, like, you know, you do that all summer, and then all of a sudden you'd be sitting on that rocking chair, and you'd be like, oh, man, practice is tomorrow. And then you just, you know, it's like a nervousness, but it's just like a... God, you know, but then, you know, I probably think about it on the other side. Like there are probably kids who are like really, really good at football who are like sick. Can't wait to just destroy people like Connor, like smaller people, you know, just can't wait to run people over like that. Like they probably were waiting all summer for that. The only, you know, to bring the nostalgia full circle, Albert, I'm wearing a football jersey, which I haven't done in a long time, but I broke it out.
And I'm excited for this discussion. So let's dive right into it.
NCAA. We're going to talk about, like I said, 10 burning questions heading into training camp. So stay tuned for that. But NCAA football is coming out. I am so excited that I'm probably going to, like, you know, it's going to take
spend
some finesse.
Spend $500 on a PlayStation.
yeah. I mean, when we had our first kid, I sold everything. I boxed up the PS. I think I had a PS3 at that point. Boxed everything up, sold the PS3, got rid of everything. I had a good N64 that I got rid of. And I was like, okay, I got to be responsible. Got to be an adult now. Regretting that because now I have no foundation except for to go out and reload with the entire system. But NCAA 25 is out, and I'm jacked.
Yeah. So, like, I feel like and I think what you just mentioned with the N64 kind of shows the slight generation gap between the two of us. Like, for me, it would have been in high school, PlayStation 1, right? Like, yeah. The first PlayStation. And before that, Super Nintendo or Sega Genesis. So when I would say, like, the peak of Madden for me was late 90s. And there had been a college football game called Bill Walsh College Football when I was really young, when I was like 12, 13 years old. That came out for Sega Genesis. I think right there in like the late 90s, college football made a comeback. And I think everybody who, and I was born in 1980, graduated high school in 98, graduated college in 02. I think everyone who's my age, or at least most people my age, felt like Madden got surpassed by college football somewhere in there, late 90s, early 2000s. And then like college football was the game. And like we played that game nonstop when I was in college and then when I got out of college. And I mean, like hurt feelings, you know, like stuff that was considered BS and you were considered a dirty player. Like if you had like an onside kick trick, right? Like no one wanted to play against you.
Sure.
Broken controllers from being hurled across the room. You know, ebbs and flows and who's the dominant force, you know, win streaks, lose streaks, all the emotions, the ups and the downs. Like this is this coming back is like really brings me back.
I've a lot of questions.
Day. It's an emotional day, Connor.
It is. I do have a lot of questions, though, because I remember, like, you know, my big thing. And I'm sure all of our things, like, you know, we always in the writing business, we encourage people to in the media business. We're like, oh, these guys should do the right thing.
Yep.
But I would just lie to every recruit's family and be like, yeah, your kid's going to play right away, you know? And then I would just get him there and I'd be like, nah, you know, like Nick Saban, like, sorry, you don't know ball. But,
well, the bet, like, and then the guy that the top recruits, you would give them like a cool number and like dress them up, like, you know, with the, you know, with 15 wristbands up their arms and like the cowboy collar and the visor, like the really special players got the special single digits. Right. Like that was, I feel like there was like a lot of things that were pretty common there. And everybody did the, like, take the Mac team. And I think at one point you could eventually move them into power conferences or you could earn your way into a power conference, right? So
yeah, you used to be able to move, you know, you could change the conferences. Like, so I always took the, I used to like to take like Harvard or Princeton and just load them up with like 6'5", you know.
And put them in the ACC.
or like the SEC, you know, and like have like, like... Harvard, Alabama SEC championship game. Yeah. Like it was like 1910 again.
I mean, everyone, like, I like, there's very few things that resonate with everybody, but like taking Kent State to like national prominence, everyone can relate with that.
Western Illinois or Northern Illinois, whatever the Leathernecks were, Western Illinois or Northern Illinois. I can't remember.
Like, I feel like the move back in the day was whatever your favorite team was, right? Like, I would take like Ohio State and play like one season with them, right?
Yeah.
Like win the national title is just kind of like your lid lifter to like playing the game, right? And I, like, back then I'd like finish the season in like an embarrassingly short amount of time.
Like a day, 2 days. Like
Yeah. So then once that was done, then it was like no fun to play with them anymore because you'd be able to like get any recruit you wanted or whatever, right? And so then it was time to reset and go back and get like the mid-major team and start to build the mid-major team up.
Yeah.
And then when you were playing against your friends and stuff, you would use the power teams and all of that.
But I wonder now, like, is there like NIL stuff written in? Like, do we get to pay the kids now? Like, that's what I want to do.
I want to say like NIL isn't in it yet. And I think I heard, and I might be wrong, but I think I heard it's because technically the rules don't allow for the schools to pay, even though everybody knows what's happening. Like, technically the rules don't allow for the schools to make direct payments to the players. But like, I don't know why they couldn't put like boosters in the game, right?
I mean, part of this has got like, there's got to be like a Buddy Garrity from Friday Night Lights mode where like you have to somehow indirectly get the funds to the players. So it's like, there should be a mode where it's like, come up with a meet and greet at the car wash so that your star wide receiver can get $11,000 in a paper bag, you know?
Buddy Garrity was such a perfect character too. Like owns a car dealership. Like, yeah. Like,
and later kind a of bar.
Like, huh?
Later a bar. So my wife and I did a full rewatch. Well, my wife had never seen it. I had watched it.
My wife loves it. And she like, I can't get her to watch much football stuff, but she loves Friday Night Lights.
We're almost done with a full rewatch, and the Buddy Garrity character arc is epic. He's back on his feet now. He was hooking up with Tyra Collette's mom, and then his marriage disintegrated, but he's back. So, you know, being a dad, you know? But yeah, I don't know if there's going to be a... at some point, they're going to have to address the elephant in the room here, which is that we can shower these young men with unlimited amounts of cash from the fire hose, that's going to be the fun part. Like, I want to be the benevolent, like, university president. Well, like, there should be, like, university president mode where you can just hand Arch Manning, like, $11 million. Here, take it.
Like, but then do you have to, like, go out and fundraise too if you're the coach? You know what I mean? Like, do you have to go out and like glad hand with like Buddy Garrity? You know what I mean?
Like, it would be the
offer some like oil baron, like a luxury suite or something like that. Like,
it's like we're already spending all this time playing fake football, and now we're doing like fake civil service to like put ourselves in line for fake relationships with fake boosters and then to get fake cash when like
to land fake recruits.
Is there a way, like,
I mean, how long until like there are high school kids in this game? Like, seriously, because like, wouldn't you think like they could eventually do that where it's like, okay, like we're going to take like the Rivals top 250 or whatever, and we're going to put them in the game as recruits?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I mean, you could probably do it now. Like, there's probably a way that you can download it, like a patch or whatever. You know, these kids know what's going on. They could do it. You know, but it's exciting. I'm excited for the kids, you know, to be able to unlock that. That was like a gateway drug for me to be obsessed with football. Now that I'm old and crusty and, you know, I don't necessarily need it anymore, or I don't have time for it anymore. My kids aren't quite old enough to grasp video games yet, but I'm very happy for the kid who gets to go to Target today with his parents and come home with NCAA 25.
I don't think you can actually buy it today.
Can't.
I think it's only I don't think you can go to the store and actually buy it today. I think you can download it today, and then it gets to stores, I think, later in the week. Mm-hmm. I might be wrong. I might be wrong, but I think that's where it is, which to me is really weird too, isn't it? Doesn't that take the thrill out of it?
Yeah, you got to unwrap it. You got to see who is on the cover.
The anticipation of the drive home from the store.
Yeah, who's on the cover?
So it's Donovan Edwards from Michigan. The running back from Michigan, Travis Hunter, the two-way guy, the corner receiver from Colorado, and then Quinn Ewers, the quarterback from Texas. I think those are the three.
Okay. No Ohio State people. It's interesting.
Well, there were too many to choose from. Wouldn't be fair to pick anyone. Any just one.
We're going to get into the 10 burning questions. I'm going to kind of like, so Albert has this column. You guys can go up and read it on si.com. I'm going to call a brief audible and sort of shoehorn in another one of Albert's columns as a burning question, because I think it was really good. And I'm telling Albert this for the first time. I was talking to someone from the NFL multiverse the other day, and they actually brought up, they were like, this was a really good job by Albert. So pat on the back. But this idea that all access, and you wrote about this, like all access fatigue, like right here in New York, what everyone's talking about is this idea of the Giants on Hard Knocks. And it's like, oh, this is how it really went down. And we've gotten to this stage where there's a preseason Hard Knocks, there's a training camp Hard Knocks, there's an in-season Hard Knocks, there'll be a postseason Hard Knocks, whatever it is, you know, and every team does their own version of Hard Knocks. It's exhausting. Good PR people have figured out a way to completely stage it, right? So that your team gets your message across. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember last year, there was a moment where we all thought that the, you know, the general feel that the Jets needed an offensive tackle, right? And the Steelers traded up to get a guy right in front of the Jets. And then the Jets conveniently had like a Hard Knocks clip of Joe Douglas, like working around that narrative, you know, and getting somebody else. And so, and the Giants are preseason Hard Knocks right now, right? Very conveniently. Like, they're handling it the right way. You know, everything was cut and dry with Saquon. You know, everybody loves each other, the end, you know, and all this stuff. And I do think that, you know, the more that we get of this stuff, the less actual inside access we're even getting. And at some point, that's going to be uninteresting, right? We had quarterback on Netflix. Now we got receiver on Netflix. At some point, there's going to be backup interior swing tackle on Netflix, you know? And it's like, what, you know, we're missing something here. You know what I mean? I feel like Camp Arm on Netflix. Camp Leg on Netflix. Yeah. Backup kicker, the guy who knows he's going to lose the job. Yeah.
The guy's just there. So like the regular kicker can take days off.
Yeah. I mean, at some point, right, we're going to tire of this, I feel like, right?
Kicker would be interesting because
kicker would be good.
You know, I've always heard this about kickers and punter, like specialists in general, is that like there are certain points that they're all really good golfers because there are certain points in the calendar where there's just not like a lot for them to do. So they show up for work and then they kind of like can like leave early. So they all just go play golf all the time.
Yeah. I mean, it's awesome. Yeah. Why wouldn't you?
I think it was Jay Feely told me that once. Like, but they're all like, there are a ton of kickers who are like outstanding golfers. And that's part of the reason why is because there are points in the calendar where they have just a lot of time to go and do that. Team build.
Must be nice, guys.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, so I think it ties in a little bit to a discussion that we've had in the past. But like at some point, I feel like, and everybody loves football. Yeah. We know that. That's why we're here. But like we're just wringing everything we can out of this dish rag. You know what I mean? And we're really squeezing it. Like at some point, isn't everybody like, all right, there's nothing else that I can't possibly care about this anymore.
I think the off season ones are completely different. And I am really entertained by what I want to be clear about that. Like the pick is in the Roku channel series. I thought was really good with the Rams, the Commanders, the Bears, and was there a fourth team? The Cardinals?
I didn't even know this existed. There's a Roku one, too?
There's a Roku series called The Pick Is In.
Good Lord.
Which is the Ram. It's the Ram. It has the Rams, the Cardinals, the Commanders, and the Bears. Those four teams, and it basically is like a timeline of the draft.
Right? Let me guess. Did they all get their guy? Top guy on the board? Everybody? Yeah.
You know what's interesting, though, is like I feel like in both this one and in the Giants offseason one, there's been stuff that's gotten in there that the teams didn't really, at least my perception is the teams wouldn't have really wanted in there. So with the Rams, like, so I'll give everybody a look behind the curtain here. Like I knew like the day of the draft, the Rams had like sort of two targets, right? That they were looking to potentially trade up for. One was Brock Bowers. The other was Byron Murphy. And they were very, they wanted to keep that tight. I had heard it and it didn't get out right after the draft. And, you know, I remember like thinking, okay, I'm going to try and circle back and report on this at some point. You know, it's one of those things you kind of, as a reporter, tuck away. And then the Brock Bowers thing got out. Like, and I think got out like over the, maybe like the 3 or 4 days after the draft, but the Byron Murphy thing hadn't gotten out. And then the Byron Murphy thing got out in this series. And I just think there were some people in the Rams organization that were unhappy with that. And the reason why is really nuanced. Who were their first two draft picks? They were pass rushers,
right?
It was Jared Verse and Braden Fisk. And so for those two guys, that kind of sucks. You know what I mean? Like that's tough, right? So there's that like thing like that like happens in the off season that's so different. Like that doesn't happen during training camp. You don't have something like that during training camp. Then with the Giants, the Saquon stuff, I don't know that they knew exactly how like the Saquon stuff was going to come out. In fact, like I could tell you like a week, 2 weeks before the series premiered, they had no idea what was going to be in there. And that's so fundamentally different than the Hard Knocks training camp, because every week's sort of a new week when you're doing that, right? Like, so you do it, it comes out, like you vet it on Monday, it comes out on Tuesday, boom, it's done. In this case, NFL Films just had like 4 months of footage, and they weren't putting it out as it happened. They were putting it out way after. So that's like a totally different dynamic.
The teams don't have final editing power over that?
They do, but I think the way some of the Saquon stuff came out, I think some teams would look at that and say like, oh, wow, you know, like I saw some people going after the Giants for their handling of it. Like, and I was like, I thought it was fine. You know what I mean? But there's so many things that happen in the off season, so many hard discussions that have to be had, so many swings and misses that happen for every team, right? Like, so you swing on a trade up and you don't get it, but you're still happy with who you drafted. And sometimes that stuff works out. There are reasons why that stuff doesn't become public. There are reasons why those conversations, those hard conversations you have to have with your own players about hitting free agency, there's a reason why those have been kept private over the years, right? And I just think, like, there's so much relationship stuff. Like, here's a great example. So in the pit, which I'd encourage you to watch the Roku channel series, Connor, because it was really good.
How do I get Roku? I wasn't very
in tune on it. Like I went on my TV, I downloaded the Roku channel app. I guess I'm doing an ad for them there. So you go on your TV, you download the Roku channel app, and it was right there for me.
Native advertising. I only watch like Family.
Although
Feud.
If they want to advertise with us, I would say maybe we're open for business. I don't know.
Sure.
You download it, and then it's right there. So the Commanders and Eagles, there were some discussions about the trade they made, and it's unusual for teams to trade within the division, but it happened here with a trade in the second round. I think it was the one where the Eagles came up to get Cooper DeJean, right?
Mm.
So
Cooper DeJean.
So I'm still a little unclear on the pronunciation. I think it's Cooper DeJean, but I'm not 100% positive. We're going to have to work that one out. But there was a point during the trade talks where Adam Peters got off the phone with the Eagles and was like, Howie's a pain in the ass. Right? Like,
I was just about to, yeah, that's, yeah. Well, generally,
so,
right?
So part of my reporting for that was like finding out if they, and it turns out that yes, Adam Peters actually called Howie Roseman and cleared it with him. Like, cause he had seen like, okay, like this is going in.
That's
cleared
funny.
It with him. And then went to Bob Lang, who he was together with in San Francisco. He's their PR guy in Philly, right? Went to Bob Lang and cleared it with him. And I thought that was interesting that the teams had to do that work on their own. You know what I mean? Which sort of speaks to, and I don't know if you saw the Mayock quote at the end of my story on All Access, but you sort of wonder how this is going to affect the relationship between NFL Network and the teams, or NFL Films and the teams. Because NFL Films had always had this like sacred trust with the teams. And so much of that was based off of one guy, Steve Sable, who, God rest his soul, is gone now.
Wonderful human. How is this going to,
Mayock's take was like that trust that Sable built, like that's not there anymore. So, you know, I think that there's a lot of relationship stuff that goes into the All Access stuff that's really, really interesting now.
It's sort of like, it reminds me of, like, I don't know if, do you follow Albert any? So my Instagram algorithm gives me this. And I don't really know why, but like the hardcore efficiency mom algorithm on Instagram. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Okay. I don't know if I have that. I definitely have like the complaining about youth sports algorithm on
okay.
my Instagram.
So that's what you're on.
So it's probably like a cousin of it, right?
Yeah. I'm like for some reason, my Instagram algorithm thinks I'm like a mother of like a very large family, probably because I look up, well, I don't know. I don't know why. But you know, cause I don't want to pigeonhole, anybody or insult anybody or anything like that. But, It's like this thing where a lot of these moms, like, basically, like, everything that their kid does, and dads do this too, everything their kids does is now content, you know what I mean? And right. So it's like, yeah. Well, look at this. I woke up at 6 o'clock in the morning and I ran 5 miles and then I got my kids up and then look at the breakfast I'm making them. I'm holding their phone up and I'm holding the phone up to their face while they're eating their breakfast. You know, look at that. And look at how good, healthy of a breakfast I'm giving them and all this stuff. And the NFL is going to cannibalize itself because, like, every fun conversation, everything that kind of made the NFL, like that swaggering Wild West tough guy, whatever it is now being like taken and monopolized for content, you know, and utilized for content, you know?
It's like the, you know, like I sort of take this back to like the Richie Incognito thing, right? And I think we all have text groups where, and I'm not saying we say stuff like what was said there, but we all have text groups with friends.
I don't know if I have a Richie Incognito text group.
Where we say, but everybody has, like, I think everybody has a text group or two.
That they would not like to go public.
With friends where it's almost a competition who could say the least appropriate things to each other.
For sure.
You know?
Yes.
This happens often in fantasy football drafts. I would say there's a lot of things where I feel like growing up, your trust with someone was built on things like that. Like, I know that's never going to get out. I know saying that thing to that person, even though it's highly inappropriate and I wouldn't say it to other people, and that person knows I'm kidding and it'll never see the light of day. And that's part of the trust you had with people. And I remember when the Richie Incognito thing happened, like, there was all of these text messages that came out. And it was like, it sideswiped like three other guys who were just in there in those text groups. You know what I mean? And like, it was just, it was like, God, like, this stuff can all become public now.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you kind of think about it, like, if I had been of the age where there were cameras in bars, you know what? Like, everyone literally has a camera in their pocket. Like, that's terrifying. Of somebody my generation, like, that's terrifying. You know what I mean? Like, so what that's like now in an NFL building is crazy, you know? And I think, like, to some degree, that's why as the barriers to produce these things have come down, as it's become easier and cheaper to produce these things, as technology's improved, that's why I think more teams are like, screw it, we'll do it ourselves. You know what I mean? Like, we want to do things to let our fans in, and we want to do things that are going to help us market and sell the players and the team and are good for everybody. But why wouldn't we just do it ourselves? And if you look, like, some of what the teams are doing now is really high quality.
It's just as good, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I think about, like, the Colts did a great job with their draft series. And they would show a lot of stuff, like, that was really insightful stuff that people like me and you really like to watch. But it didn't, like, go into the stuff that would, like, really affect the team in an adverse way, you know? It's hard to do like a draft, an honest look at like an off season, like the draft, free agency, whatever, without having those hard conversations as part of it, you know?
Well, my thing is, like, if you're going to do it, right, and this is what we could never do, but this is like my fever dream, right? If you're really going to do it, if you're really going to do off season hard knocks, if you're really going to do training camp hard knocks, like, you know, we have to get to the central issue here, which is that in 90% of the places, the reason that things are messed up is because the owner sucks. You know what I mean? And like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you can't have, you know.
And that's the one thing that's never going to see the light of day.
And that's the one thing that's never going to see the light of day. It's like, you know, okay, we'll have the war room camera where it's like, okay, we got to scramble our starting quarterback.
Ultimately,
down.
That's who films answers to too.
Right.
Like, that's technically, like, that's where the buck stops.
And to me, know? that is not the, like, if you spend time talking to people in the NFL about what really ails them, what is the problem? Hey, why didn't you guys have a really good backup quarterback last year? Why didn't you guys do this? Why didn't you guys do that? And it's always, they point right upstairs, you know? Like, half the time that we're like, God, why can't this general manager get you just sign a wide receiver? Well, it's right. Not because he doesn't want to. You know what I mean? And so, like, I would just watch an hour of Hard Knocks if coaches and general managers making fun of the owner and just being like, this guy or girl is just a complete mess, complete train wreck. He's not opening up the purse strings, like, because that's all access. That to me is all access. You know,
I've had those conversations with some of these guys, and they are like, a lot of these guys are genuinely funny and would be like, you would die laughing watching that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like if you could like follow these guys out in the golf course or something.
100%. And so it's like, don't tell me that this is all access when it's like this weird towing the line thing. And it's like, just really tell me what's going on.
Yeah. I think it's easier during camp, like, right. Like, because everything is mostly self-contained, where you aren't going to like go and bump into what another team's business is, or some player that you didn't draft, you know, he's involved. Like, it's just easier to contain it in a training camp setting, you know? And it's actually interesting talking to some of these people when I was reporting that story out too, because like some of the feedback I got was, well, yeah, we did the Hard Knock series and there were teams that wouldn't do joint practices with us because of it,
right?
You know? Like, so like there are even complications with that. And that is a, I mean, 98% of what happens in training camp is self-contained within a single team and a lot easier to control. When you start involving players you didn't sign, players you didn't draft, teams that didn't sign up to be part of it, it becomes way more complicated.
We're gonna move on because I'm getting hot.
Yeah, I think we veered off into 15 different directions.
We did
too, but thank you for promoting this story. I appreciate it.
It was well done. So another one of the burning questions heading into training camp now is the kickoff rule. I've had some really interesting conversations about the kickoff rule. You spoke to Joe Judge. Joseph Francis Judge, per Wikipedia, born December 31st, 1981. He's an American football coach, guys, who is currently serving as a senior analyst for the Ole Miss Rebels, which I didn't know. How is that okay with him? Like, he's a Mississippi State guy.
I know. I've actually had that conversation with him, and he said, yeah, it was a little weird.
It's got to be eating him alive inside, right?
He's gotten some crap from some people that he went to college with.
But I mean, Joe Judge cut his teeth on the special teams side of the ball. He's a really talented special teams coach. What was his take on the new kickoff rule? Because you know, the more that I'm talking to some people, the more they're like, dude, it's not going to be what you think it is. Like, it's not going to be super exciting, super thrilling, game breaking. You know, at least early on, guys are going to play it super conservative.
Yeah.
But I'm curious what is Joe Judge's take on this?
Yeah, I mean, the feedback I've gotten is that, you know, like I think there's going to be a lot of experimentation in camp, and teams that have high reps in camp are going to be able to do a little bit more with it early on. One thing that was very clear coming back out of the spring was that just the rules in the spring make it almost impossible to simulate it, you know, like, so you don't really get a great look at it in the spring because of the way the rules set up. So that leaves you with a finite amount of time in the summer to really get a look at what it's going to look like, experiment with it, tinker with it, everything else. And, you know, that's where, like Joe said this, he thought like that the teams that have joint practices are going to be at a distinct advantage because you can really rep it there. You know, and you can do some things that, because everything you do in a preseason game is on tape. Like, so you're going to be able to do some stuff with another team that isn't going to be on tape for the other 30 teams that aren't on that practice field.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see if the teams that have had the joint practice experience over the summer have a little bit of an advantage early on with some of the stuff that they're doing. You know, his prediction was it's going to take 5 or 6 weeks to really shake out what it's going to look like and the strategy on it and everything else. And, you know, the other thing we talked about, and I know this has been sort of a big story, like when we've been talking about the kickoff over the last few months, is do you put big stars back there? Like, would the Dolphins put Tyreek Hill back there? And I, not just from Joe, but from a number of special teams coaches, the response I've gotten on that really is probably not right away.
Yeah, you don't.
Like, yeah, because you don't know what the collisions are going to look like. You don't really, you can guess, but you don't like have a real solid idea of how all of this is going to play out, how all of this is going to look, what the injury situation is going to be like, you know, what some of the unintended consequences are going to be. And so for at least September and October, like you probably won't see, you know, the Tyreek Hills of the world back there. Now, if the play proves to be markedly safer than the old play and you're seeing explosive returns, then maybe that flips. And maybe you see teams in November and December when the games become more important and there's more evidence out there. Maybe then you start to see that a little bit more. But even then, like, I wonder, Connor, would it be like it is now anyway? Where it's just like, I mean, you put a guy like that back there, maybe in a really important spot, and that's it. You know what I mean? Like when you need a spark or you're down or whatever, you know?
My question is, though, right? I mean, because you're the penalty, quote unquote, for kicking the ball out of the back of the end zone.
Yeah,
it's
the 30-yard line.
Is the 30-yard line the debt? Like, there really isn't a ton of downside to just blasting the ball out of the back of the end zone, right?
Right.
I mean, And you're avoiding an incrementally large possibility that these teams can.
Are we at the point where every kicker can do that, like on command,
kick the ball out of the back of the end zone?
Yeah, from the 35.
I mean, it's got to be close. You don't think everyone can do it?
I think everybody can do it. I don't know. Can everybody do it on command?
How far can you got the ball on a tee at the 50-yard line. Where's that ball going? If you hit it true.
Kicking was never my strong suit, so if I get it 20 yards, I'm happy, I think.
You think you get it down to the 30?
In the air. You're talking about on the fly, right? Like, not like a dribbler.
I'll give you the dribble. With a roll, do you think you can get the ball?
I never kicked. I never did that, so I don't know. How about you?
I think if you gave me like a good deflated old school Patriots football and you put it at the 50-yard line, I bet I could get down to the 10.
See, did you ever kick competitively? Were you ever like the kicker for your team or anything like that, or no?
I was the Abington Junior Comets A team extra point kicker, and I was
nice.
I was 0-4.
So that would have been like eighth grade, right?
So, like
the A team.
It's like seventh and eighth grade. Yeah, I had four shots at it. I missed every single one.
Okay, you had four shots in.
But I didn't kick off. I just kicked extra points.
But in eighth grade, like, an extra point's hard. Like,
it is hard.
If I remember right, when I was a kid, the rules in Pop Warner were you get 1 point for a 2 point conversion. You got two for kicking the extra point. I might be wrong about that, but there was some quirk to the rule that like rewarded you for kicking it. I think
this is like obviously no one cares about
at
this.
One point.
But like, yeah. I think like we were practicing alongside the varsity one day. Like, they did like a cool thing where the varsity guys came over, and then like we were just screwing around. We didn't have a kicker, and then I kicked an extra point, a good extra point in practice, like over the varsity field goal block team. And they were like, "Oh, great, we got a kicker!" And then I missed every single. I was like Landry Clark in Friday Night Lights. Like, I couldn't hit a single extra point. But I think if I got from the 50-yard line, kickoff. Now, I mean, so I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that this isn't going to be hard, but I think that a lot of teams are going to invest in these long bombers, because if you don't, you know, the mechanism to return is so much better now. Obviously, I mean, the NFL wants to boost ratings. So, they want to boost points. They want to boost scoring. But, you know, why would you give a team a chance to do that?
So one thing that was interesting was, like, in talking to Joe for the story, was we talked about like what are called ancillary kicks, right? So like, that's your ability to knuckle it, to squib it, like, and like to be able to do those things with the ball, right? And place it.
Right.
Which is a really, really hard thing to do. And so I asked
for
him,
most
like
people.
I said at any given time, how many guys in the league do you think can do that effectively? And he said probably 8.
Okay.
Like, they can effectively take the ball and put it where they want, and that's like regardless of like conditions too. Like, where it's snowing, raining, whatever, they can still do it. There are very few kickers that can do it. So having that conversation also made me wonder, does this like up the value of the kicker? You know, like, where the kicker can dictate field position, and the swing in field position could be that big if you have a kicker who's really effective with all of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And And that would be like where the whole Justin Reed argument comes in, where like, do you put Justin Reed out there if you got a guy who can do it? And Justin Reed has a soccer background and is really talented at like, do you put that guy out there knowing maybe like you'll lose some of the special kicks that you could be able to do? It's just, it's complicated. And I think there's like a lot for them to sort through that isn't going to be sorted through until we get to whatever, November 1st, and it'll probably still be evolving at that point.
Another one of the burning questions that you had in the pre-training camp post here was something that I think that we've skipped over quite a bit, and not on purpose. There's just a lot to talk about. But, I mean, I still don't think we're at the point where we are even fully realizing that Jim MF and Harbaugh is the coach of the Chargers. And, you know, what kind of implications that would have if he has immediate success in turning that team around again. Now,
yep.
When your team is disappointing enough that you fire the general manager, I think a lot of, like the Chargers did with Tom Telesco, I think there needs to be an inherent understanding here that there were large swaths of that roster that were not up to par. Like the entire secondary, let's start there. Like the middle core of that team, what you want to talk about, the linebackers, the interior defensive linemen, like all the tough guy positions, really, they struggled mightily with, and then the back end, but they surrounded it with stars, right? So everything looked good. Can Jim Harbaugh fix that in a year? And is it inappropriate for us to expect him to come out and just start clobbering folks?
I mean, I just think his reputation and like what he was able to, like I've made the comparison before. I think he's like a modern day Bill Parcells in an NFL context. Like that's what he is as a coach. And that his program is going to be hard. He's going to get immediate results. He is going to really, really build an identity. And like, that's what's so fascinating about the Harbaugh thing is like, it looks the same everywhere he goes. And it looked the same at Stanford as it did at San Francisco, as it did at Michigan. And we've talked about that. So like, that's like the whole, like picking Joe Alt over Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze thing, right? Like you pick Joe Alt there because you're building an identity and you're building like the foundation of what you want to be. The one difference I would say, like between this place and those places is, like when he went to the Niners, right? He had a good foundation of linemen. I think when he went to Michigan, he had a good foundation of linemen. You know, in San Francisco, Joe Staley was there. I believe they just drafted like Mike Iupati and Anthony Davis, right? Like, so they had a bunch of like former first round picks who are young and rising on the offensive line. Justin Smith was on the defensive line.
Yeah.
You know, like they had a foundation of those guys, right? And so for the Chargers now, that foundation is, what are we talking about here? We're talking about Rashawn Slater, Joe Alt, who's a rookie, you know, who will be their right tackle, and then the two edge guys on defense, Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack, who are older but still really good players. Is that enough? And like, if you're able to fill in around them, can you build enough with like the meat and potatoes of Jim Harbaugh operation? Can that be there? I have confidence he's going to be able to do it because he's done it everywhere he's gone. And it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, like I think it's fascinating that they brought in two backs from the Ravens. You know what I mean? Like there's like to go and bring in J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards, and those guys have injury history and everything else. But like to bring in two like tough guy running backs from his brother's team, I think says something about who they're going to be too. Like he's leaving breadcrumbs everywhere. So I'm fascinated to see what the training camp itself looks like, because to establish that you gotta train a certain way. And I can still remember when his first training camp in San Francisco, they had what they call now commonly two spot in San Francisco, and they had lost the entire spring because that was the lockout year, and there were new rules going in about how much he could do in training camp and everything else. And Jim Harbaugh's innovation at the time was basically to run two practices at once. Because in training camp, you can do it when you have 90 guys. So he's like basically holding simultaneous practice. Now, a lot of teams do that now. But that was one of the solutions to getting around some of the things that were going to limit him that first year. I'm really, really interested to see the way that this works. I think like their training camp could wind up looking a lot different than a lot of other training camps, which I think you know, again, is again really, really interesting.
I don't know what, because the implications for that division are huge, right? If the Chargers come in and they're the Chargers right away, and the Broncos, for example, are still kind of waiting through this whole deal with Bo Nix and how all this stuff's going to happen. Isn't that fascinating, right? That, like, we may never see Sean Payton succeed in Denver. You know, it's, it has implications
the,
for Antonio.
The Broncos are, like, quietly rebuilding.
I don't think it's, you know? It's not quiet to me. I mean, you got $90 million in dead cap, and you just took a reach for a quarterback at number 12. That screams rebuild to me. You traded Jerry Judy, you know?
I mean, nobody, I don't know, like, I feel like people have almost been afraid to call it that.
Well, because, you can't call hiring, it that anymore. You're not allowed to call it that anymore.
Yeah, hiring Sean Payton is a win now move, like, by an ownership group that's got, I mean, the deepest pockets in the league. Maybe the deepest pockets in the planet.
They got family, that whale right? mart money.
Yeah, so, I feel like that, like, that's a pretty, like, they're rebuilding now. And the opportunity is there. Like, are the Chiefs vulnerable now?
I don't know.
Probably not.
I don't think so. I think it just really sucks to be the Broncos and the Raiders, if we're being 100% entirely honest. I have two more that I really want to get to. Again, I urge everybody to read this. I think it's a great primer for our training camp. One was, you know, where on earth is this quarterback market going to go? We still have the Tua Tagovailoa deal to get done at some point here. And the other thing that I'll add is, and I wonder if this is true, because I'm going to lump in your, you had something on the Cowboys too, but I'm going to lump that in with this. My guess is that Dak Prescott's a really smart guy, right? And he's got good agents. And the last time he came up for a deal, the sticking point between the Cowboys and Dak Prescott was the length of the deal. Dak wanted a shorter deal with more guaranteed money so he could come up again. Now he's coming up again. If you can see behind me, I wrote about it right there.
that was your first cover, I believe.
I think that was my first SI cover story. Yeah, back in 2018, whenever that was. Now, my guess is that Dak Prescott knows full well the entire team, the entire league is in desperation mode. Everybody's got to win every year. If he were to come up as a true free agent on the open market, I mean, I had one agent say, like, that guy, he could make $65 million a year. I mean, he could push $70 million a year.
Yeah.
So that is where the quarterback market is kind of at a standstill, I feel like, because, you know, we're all saying, why isn't Jerry Jones getting this deal done? Why isn't Jerry Jones getting this deal done? I wonder if Dak is like, I want to come up, because I want, like, okay, let's invent a scenario in our mind where the Colts are really good again, but Anthony Richardson gets hurt again, and that team is one step away, right? They got a good defense. Yeah. Everything's firing on all cylinders. You don't think they'd pay $65 million a year to put Dak Prescott and Shane Steichen together? You don't think the Titans would do it?
I mean, the Giants would be an obvious one, right?
You think, like, the Giants would do it? Yeah.
The Giants scenario would be Daniel Jones just looks average, and the team plays too well to be in a position to draft a quarterback high. So say they have the 20th pick next year, and there are three quarterbacks in the draft, and they're all going to go in the top 10, whatever, right? So then where is your option? You know, they're sort of like the Vikings were then in 2018, where it's, how do we level up at quarterback? And Dak Prescott might give you the opportunity to do that. So I think, like, it's just, it's fascinating to look at, like, the way that the three guys that are left out there, Jordan Love, Tua Tagovailoa, and Dak Prescott, all kind of intertwine. And the other interesting thing, and this is probably inside baseball for a lot of people, they're all represented by the same agency. So I would think, while they each have separate agents, the fact that Athletes First represents all three of them, I think, does add a little wrinkle to this, where it's fair to say, like, that, you know, like, the agents may be working together with each other on this.
I mean, good to me.
Right.
Right?
Right. Well, I mean, in the legal collusion, if there's collusion happening on the other side, I think we should be okay with it.
Do you think, right? Do you agree that Dak Prescott could make more than $60 million on the free agent market?
I mean, I wouldn't pay it, but because I'm of the opinion that you can find a reclamation project that is at least a good enough percentage where I think like in that neighborhood, and again, I'm not pocket watching here, but in that neighborhood, I do think like you should be, I think if you're shopping in that neighborhood, you should expect a very, like the kind of guy who, like, even if you have like four major injuries on offense, you can still operate at a high level. Like Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. Now I think Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow is that guy, Josh Allen. Like, I think you have to be in that neighborhood. And I don't know that Dak is there. And I always sort of think back to 2023 with this stuff with Daniel Jones. Baker Mayfield was out there for them. Is Daniel Jones a better quarterback than Baker Mayfield?
No.
Right. And like, this isn't even revisionist history. If you had gone back a year before that, you would have said the same thing, I think.
Yes. I agree with that.
If you had gone back, you probably would have said that exact same thing. So I just, that part of it for me, when do we get to the point with these numbers where it's like, take the reclamation project for $10 million. Take Sam Darnold for $10 million rather than paying Dak Prescott $60 million.
I would still, I agree with you, but
you know what I'm saying though, right?
I know what you're saying, but I think that there are, I mean, the feedback that I'm getting from people around the league is the window of opportunity has never been shorter. The pressure to win has never been more consistent. Someone reached out after I wrote something on load management. If you went to an 18, 19, 20 game season, and they said, "You don't understand, dude, we got to win now. You know, I can't rest my players for a game because every game I have to win." And I'm wondering if, like, off the top of my head, Giants, like you said, the Colts, if Anthony Richardson doesn't work out. The Panthers, if they need to do a hard reboot, the Dolphins, like say they keep Mike McDaniel for the last year.
Glad you brought up the Dolphins.
Yes.
Because if you're the Dolphins,
if you're going to pay two of $45 million a year, wouldn't you rather just pay Dak Prescott $60 million?
Or do you keep an eye on what's happening in Atlanta? And if Michael Penix develops fast,
you try
and
to
now all of a sudden, like they look like Michael Penix looks like he's like coming even with Kirk Cousins. Mm-hmm. Is there a trade to be made there after the year?
Mm.
Where you got Mike McDaniel, who was with Kirk Cousins in Washington, who's Kyle Shanahan's guy, right? And no one loves Kirk Cousins more than Kyle. Like, I just think you have to think creatively through these things. And, you know, if you're the Dolphins, does that allow you to kind of draw a hard line and say, no, dude, like, we love you, but we want to draw a lot. We need to be responsible here so we can continue to build the team around you. And if you aren't willing to take this number, then we're going to think creatively about a way to replace you eventually.
Yeah. Oh.
Dolphins Hard Knocks off season 2025.
Oh, come on. You know it's going to happen.
I do think you have to think in those terms.
Like, Dolphins just should have done that anyway.
I think Jordan Love's different. Should have done that
this offseason.
If I'm Jordan Love, so I think with Jordan Love, it's a little different. And then with Jordan Love, if you're the Packers, I think you're willing to pay him on the high end the same way that the Jaguars paid Trevor Lawrence on the high end because the ceiling is so freaking high.
Right.
Right. Like I think Jordan Love's ceiling is way up here. And we saw it at the end of the year. So if you're the Packers with Jordan Love, I think it's more, I'm willing to give you that number, but I do want to create some outs for myself. Just in case what I saw at the end of last year, because it's a small sample size, doesn't manifest to a top five quarterback in the league. So I think they're different questions with different guys. Like with Tua, I think we know what you have. And so you're dealing with that, and it's okay, like, what is this guy worth versus what my options might be after the year. With Jordan Love, for me, it would be more like, I want to get team control over this guy for some time to come, but I do want to create some trap doors for myself. So can I give him enough in the here and the now to make him comfortable where if we have to part ways 2 years from now, we can still do it.
My last one for you, and then we'll get out of here. Because we should be getting some R&R, Albert. You know, we should be out in the tanning chair.
And I feel like we're kind of like this is maybe like a B-minus podcast because we're meandering a bunch. But I think we're putting a lot of good info out there. But I think we're just meandering a little bit. You know?
I know. I got to tighten up as a host.
But I think it's good because we're saying a lot of things and we're getting a lot out there. It's just, I think maybe this is the fact that me and you haven't done this for 3 weeks. So we're just overloaded with stuff to say.
I know. I'm stretching out. You know, it's like, I know this is like my last bullpen session before the start of the season, you know, and then I got to start, yeah. I got to start throwing gas. My last one for you is this. We talked a little bit about Sean Payton, and we remember how we thought he would kind of lord over that season when he was in the media and what kind of implications that would have. I would argue that wasn't necessarily the case. I think the jobs that Sean really wanted, he didn't get. And I think he wound up with the Broncos job, which is maybe like number two at the highest on his wish list if he was going in there. With Bill Belichick, do you think it's more of an issue? Do you think it's less of an issue? This is our first Belichick-less season since 1974, as you pointed out in the column. Do you think it matters? Do you think it ends up mattering? Or do you think it's a little bit like Sean Payton where it's like, you know, okay, this is part of it, but it's not a huge deal. I don't know. How do you think he's going to factor in, if at all, this year?
Depends on how things go in the NFC East.
Right.
I mean, I think that there are certain jobs that he has natural connections to. Obviously, the Giants would be one with his relationship with ownership and everything else there. The Eagles, he's got a great relationship with Howie Roseman. I think if Nick Sirianni had been gone at the end of last year, probably would have been Belichick or Vrabel as the head coach in Philadelphia this year. And then, you know, like Dallas, he's got a really good relationship with the Joneses. And there would be the side benefit there of like the anything you can do, I can do better thing with Parcells, where Parcells ended his coaching career, not football career, but coaching career with the Cowboys. Bill would be doing the same thing. And, you know, you remember the Parcells quote was everyone in the NFL is a lounge act except the Cowboys, and they're on the big stage. And so Parcells says it, you know, I think there's another guy probably pretty close to him who may think that way too. So I think those three teams are the ones you're going to want to watch, are the ones that would be talked about the most if they do not play well.
Right.
I'm just interested to see the psychology of this for Bill, because I think Bill's like happy with where he's at right now and content with where he's at right now. And, you know, I think that the media thing's going to be interesting for him. I think these things become really unpredictable with how the guys are going to like receive their new lot in life. John Gruden, everyone thought when he got fired by the Bucs that he was going to be 1 year out and then right back in. And it took, what, 9 years?
Right.
Of teams throwing money at him. And then Bill Cowher, another one, everybody's like, he's the next Giants coach because he had a relationship with the Maras. Bill Cowher never came back. And Bill Cowher was, what, 48?
Yeah.
Something like that, I think, right? When he left the Steelers. So I say that because sometimes these guys don't know how they're going to like being out of that hole that they've been in forever. And sometimes they like it more than they think they will. And sometimes it's scary for them to jump back into that hole because they go from legitimately, to put this in real life terms, Connor, you're going from working, what, 100-hour weeks to now all of a sudden like, oh yeah, I got to show up a couple days a week and that's it. And the pay is not what it was, but it's not bad. And I can live on it fine. And I've made my money. Like, imagine going from this like grinding unending job to that. And if you like the new job that you're in, how hard it might be to jump back into the other thing.
Yeah. I think he wants to come back and break the record,
though. But I think he does too. I think he does too. I'm just saying, like, I think that that makes it a little unpredictable, especially for somebody of his age.
Mostly, I don't want him coming for the columnist gig at the MMQB. You know, that's
do you think
it's my spot?
So let me ask. Let me ask you this then: do you think Saban's really done?
Yes.
So we can wrap it with college football here.
Yes. I think Saban's done. I don't think Belichick's done. I think Saban recognized his faults at the NFL level. He knows he's not going to get back into the NFL, and he doesn't want to go back to college where he has to start paying these guys. And, you know,
I wonder if the Urban Meyer thing screwed up things for Saban.
I heard the other day that Urban is done too, actually.
No. But I mean, like, I'm just saying, like, I wonder if, like, Saban observing Urban just get like chewed up and spit out the way that he did, if that affects Saban's desire to go to the league.
It can't not, man. Have you ever not done anything? Like, you know, just done nothing? It's great. You know?
Yeah.
You're looking at the schedule and you're just like, oh, golf today? You know? Like maybe some fishing, you know? Like that's pretty good.
Yeah, I would that's hard with kids, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's never going to happen in my lifetime. But
yeah, I got a long way to go before I can get back to that. But I like, yeah, it's hard for me to even remember what that was like.
Bringing it full.
Oh yeah. What time's my tea time today?
Yeah, bringing it full circle. What Nick Saban, what Bill Belichick, what they should all do, just like we did in NCAAs, they got to find that hard scrabble program, turn it around. You know, like come to New Jersey and
Utah State.
Not like high school, you know what I mean? Like go to like doesn't even have to be college.
I always thought that with Bill, I was like, I think like in his like I if you had asked me when I was covering the Patriots on the beat when I was in my mid 20s in like 2006, if you had asked me like how Bill Belichick's gonna end his career, I would have said to you lacrosse coach at Wesleyan,
something like that, right?
I mean, if he likes the life he's living now, but he still wants to coach. And time commitment is an issue. And maybe he's always wanted to coach lacrosse. That'd be cool.
Looking up Wesleyan's nickname to close the show.
Cardinals.
The Wesleyan Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Albert, welcome back. We're getting...
By the way, you got to tell... Who's number 18?
Oh, so for those of you who can't see,
when you bought that, I mean, I know I always ask that question to people because I own one Ohio State jersey. I've only owned one Ohio State jersey ever, and I bought it strategically because, like, with college jerseys is complicated for obvious reasons.
Yes.
So I picked number 27 because I knew that was always going to be Eddie George. So I have that from when I was in school.
This was. I bought this because it was a player named Joey Getherall, who was like a kind of like a smaller like slot kind of receiver for Notre Dame, real try hard guy. Believe he is a police officer now. I asked Justin Tuck about that
what teams would he have been?
He had a walk off game winner in 2000 against Air Force.
Oh man, so you want to really bring it full circle? You know who his position coach would have been then?
Who? Urban Meyer, right?
Urban Meyer. Yeah, Urban Meyer.
Oh man, I got this jersey right. After the
how about that?
For Christmas after the Air Force walk off. That was a cool gift.
Oh nice,
it was a good gift.
Nice. Yeah, this is a very important week with NCAA coming out. This is the completion. I did want to finish with this too. This is the completion of the long game for me. I bought my oldest a PlayStation 5 as a birthday gift for him, air quotes, knowing the college football game was going to come out. And I have since spent a lot of time bonding with my younger son playing video games. I've very much normalized playing video games as a 44-year-old in my house in preparation for this game's release. So this is sort of the completion of a 2-year process for me, allowing for a middle-aged man to play video games in the basement.
Fast forward 2 weeks after NCAA comes out, Albert's going to have the mic headset on, calling some 11-year-old in Des Moines a jackass over online
and
play.
And divorce papers.
It's worth it. It's a good game. All right, everyone, enjoy the release of NCAA 25. Enjoy your last few weeks before we start the NFL full throttle. Albert's back. I'm back. Gilberto's coming back. Matt's coming back. The NCAA, Mitch never left. The MMQB team, John's coming back. Everybody's here. We're ready. We're ready and raring to go. Thank you guys as always.
Football's almost back.
Yeah. Football's family and it's back. All right. Don't forget it. Thank you guys for sticking.
Football is family.
Thank you guys for sticking with us all summer. Let's make it the best year yet.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Brighten up your garage or workspaces with LED utility and panel light bulbs from GT Light. GT Light light bulbs are energy efficient, and with their easy adjustable light panels, you can direct light where you need it most. Save big on all GT industrial utility and panel light bulbs. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer for more hot deals happening now. Save big.